The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher, go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Will Moore and Gavin Williamson, the Tory MP. Gavin, can we just start with what's going on in the House of Commons and the House of Lords this week? Labour have been pushing ahead with a crackdown on hereditary peers, and you would like to add an amendment and add some details to their plan.
So what Labour are wanting to do, they're wanting to banish their hereditary peers out of the House of Lords. That's fair enough. They've had it in their manifesto. They made it clear that that's what they were going to do. But actually, if they're going to get rid of the hereditaries, I think it's also right that we look at how we make the House of Lords more fit for purpose in the longer term. And there's still this anomaly with 26 Church of England bishops that continue to sit in the House of Lords. And what I'd like to see is the legislation amended so that they're also removed from the legislative body.
Why is that really the case, though, Gavin? Is it just because those bishops in the House of Lords tend to vote against the Tory party nowadays and have gone rather from being Tory party at prayer to Labour party at prayer? So is it just a total party political goal that you've got in mind here?
Not at all, Will. I mean, if you see their voting record, they've only voted about, on average, 6% of the time on division. So it's not about that. It's actually making sure that we got an upper chamber that is more reflective of the world that we live in. We're the only country other than Iran that actually has clerics embedded within our legislative system. And nowadays, and of course, I'm an Anglican, many people are, but there's only 2% of the population that's a regularly attending church. Yet we do have this block of clergy that sort of sit in the upper house. And I think it's to sustain and actually make the upper house stronger, it's right to look at making these changes when the government is looking at making changes around hereditaries.
I just can't believe, though, that you'll be looking at this institutional vandalism that Labour is proposing, and your solution to it is not, as a Tory, is not to protect the institution, but to lob some more dynamite in, you know, to make it an even bigger explosion. I mean, I would argue that the bishops, the lords, and the monarchy all go together. I mean, if we're getting rid of hereditary peers and getting rid of bishops, then why not the monarchy too? Why not knighthoods, Sir Gavin?
So what you're talking about is conflating various different things. I mean, we've seen consistent change and reform in the House of Lords to, as you see in the House of Commons. And actually, by removing the bishops, you're not removing faith from the dialogue within politics. I mean, you see in the House of Commons, you don't have a block of clergy in the House of Commons, but you still have faith and people of faith debating such issues and making sure that's part of our national discourse. I just can't understand why in today's world that you actually need to have a guaranteed seats for 26 bishops. I mean, if bishops want to actually take part in national debate, there's nothing that stops them from getting elected into the House of Commons. There's no impediment for people to governments to appoint bishops into the House of Lords into the future. But there is equally no need that we actually have a block of 26. And it's not even bishops from right across the United Kingdom. This is only English bishops, not from Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, just one part of the United Kingdom.
Will, are you able to come up with a positive case for the bishops in the House of Lords?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think the main one would be, I mean, the reason that there's that it's Church of England bishops here in the House of Lords is because when the king takes his coronation oath, one of the main things that he swears is to maintain and preserve inviolably the settlement of the Church of England and the doctrine, worship, discipline and the government thereof. And it goes on to say, preserve unto the bishops all such rights and privileges by law. I mean, that is the coronation oath that as supreme governor of the Church of England that the king swears. So, I mean, if Sir Gavin's amendment passes, I think there'd be this sort of weird scenario in which the government is putting forward a law which would be contrary to what the king has sworn last year you know, in Westminster Abbey. I think it's a big sort of constitutional problem. I think it's a mistake, actually, to just say, go ahead.
I mean, Will, sorry to jump in here, but firstly, we're not talking about the disestablishment of a church. So there's you're probably being a little bit mischievous here, of slightly trying to conflate the two together. And you're certainly not talking about the disestablishment of a church. You're actually talking about a legislative body that has got sort of rather large, rather bloated. You've got a hangover from almost medieval times of where bishops are represented as part of that legislative body. You know, you don't see that in other modern democracies. And
thank
you know,
goodness, I like the fact it's
And you're just not going to see, you know, you're still going to see faith debated in Parliament in both houses. And nowadays, I mean, I can't think of the major contributions that necessarily the bishops have contributed to over the last few years.
I mean, on that, Gavin, is it partly the case that the bishops, when they do contribute, tend to lean more to what Labour and, you know, Lib Dems and others are saying, as opposed to the Tories?
Well, I think that's their right. I mean, you know, anyone who is in the chamber, whether that's the House of Commons or House of Lords, they're absolutely entitled to express their views, express their opinions and make their views heard. It's just, if you want to preserve the institution of the House of Lords, you do need to, as you're going through a process of reform, the Labour government have decided they want to remove hereditaries. You should also take the opportunity. Are there other outliers as part of that institution that we should look at making changes to and improving to? And one of those is the fact that you've got this block of 26 English bishops sat there, which is not reflective of an upper chamber that is meant to represent the nations and the regions, to quote the Labour Party manifesto. And I would also argue, and Will might have an objection on this one as well, but we should also look at some of the other things that Labour would also put in their manifesto, but seem to have shied away from, you know, whether there's a mandatory retirement age at 80, whether there's measures to put in for low attendance, that people who aren't attending the House of Lords, that they can also be removed. And I personally think that you should actually align for financial financial declarations of interest in the House of Lords in line with the House of Commons, because it's very important to make sure that there is that transparency there. So I'd argue there's probably much more to do, not just solely about the removal of hereditaries or the removal of bishops as well.
So would your idea of the House of Lords then just be this blob of kind of former Westminster people who are shuffled off and appointed by prime ministers as rewards for service and loyalty and all those accusations that people throw at the House of Lords as it being a place of kind of cronyism, and you're now taking away people who aren't part of that? I mean, if Labour take away hereditary peers, those are also people who are not, that particular accusation can't be thrown at them. I mean, aren't you just making it even more of a sort of blobby thing?
Well, certainly that's certainly not what I would want to see. I mean, Will, I'd love to see people like you in the House of Lords. I mean, maybe you're so keen on the bishops as you hope one day to be a bishop and sneak into the House of Lords through that sort of backdoor route. But I think you should have a brilliant sort of range of opinions and diversity of opinions, not just former politicians or former local authority leaders. And I would love to see that. But I just can't quite see in today's Britain as to how just having these 26 Anglican bishops is, you know, is that reflective or makes that institution stronger? Actually, to make that institution stronger, yes, we want to have a diversity of range and of opinions. And yes, it'd be great to see people of faith and many different faiths represented into the House of Lords, but it just doesn't have to be, all be Anglicans.
On that point, I mean, we're talking about who should be in the House of Lords. I mean, do you think that successive resignation honours lists by prime ministers, where there have been peerages to often, you know, individuals which have raised eyebrows, did they really deserve it, means that it's harder to then say, well, this person shouldn't be here because they're hereditary, this person shouldn't be there because that's a bishop, but that very little people know what they did for a prime minister should be?
I mean, I have to say and confess at heart, I'm probably a bit of a unicameralist as against anything else. So, but, and I think what you need to be doing is looking at actually reform right across the sort of both the House of Commons and the House of Lords about how legislation is better scrutinised. And maybe I'm sort of, having been a former chief whip, it's maybe poacher turned gamekeeper or gamekeeper turned poacher, maybe. I'm not quite sure maybe which way best describes it. But I think one of the challenges is to get a much broader, diverse range of people with actual a greater level of specialist interest in different areas into the House of Lords. I think it's sort of incumbent for both the Prime Minister and other party leaders to try and actually get that. And one of the biggest challenges is often actually diversity, not just in terms of people's faith and background, but also regional diversity as well. You do have a very preponderance of London and the South East, and you want to have that greater strength of regional voice from right across the country.
Mm. I mean, on the point of diversity of thought, I mean, I think something I probably would agree with Sir Gavin on is that a lot of the bishops do tend to think along very similar lines in terms of the political and social beliefs. It's a problem, I think, it does exist among Church of England bishops. I mean, I will bow to no one in my criticisms of Church of England leadership, and I've got the angry emails from the Church of England press office to prove it. But my point is more broadly about the institution, and I must say it does come across to me, Gavin, that you're just a sort of modern version of ancient battle between the state and the church and politics and the church, and you're just crying out, you know, who will rid you of these turbulent priests? But on that sort of a point, though, you used the word a few times. You said that it's medieval to have bishops in the House of Lords, and that we need to be modernised. And I would just want to push back on that to say why. I mean, the monarchy is a medieval institution. So many great things of which form our institutions are medieval. I don't see medieval as a bad thing. I mean, we had a coronation ceremony last year in which the monarch was anointed with holy oil. I mean, it is so medieval. The idea of the monarchy, I think, is completely connected to the bishops, completely connected to the lords. And I think you're trying to sort of sever off a part of the institution. And I think doing so really would be a grave damage to it.
Well, I like you, I'm a great romantic. I do, though, feel that where you're asking people to voice opinions and have a say over the laws of the land, I feel that where the Anglican Church doesn't really have that sort of level of authority and legitimacy in order to be able to pass laws for the whole of the UK, especially when you look at some of those anomalies of the fact that it is only English bishops, it's not across the spectrum. And I think that because Britain has changed, it is a nation of many, many different faiths, then to have that block of Anglican bishops that do have that legislative right, I think it makes it slightly more challenging. That's why I would like to see that change. I'd like to see that removed. And I think if you actually look at opinion within the Church of England, 60% of the clergy of the Church of England also voice the opinion that they think it needs to be changed, they think it needs to be reformed, they don't think it's right. So it's not me as someone who is a lone voice in that. It's actually most Anglican clergy don't think it's right. And most of the British public don't also think it's right, whereas monarchy has the legitimacy of popular support.
Just on the point about other faiths and minority faiths and so on, I mean, I do think it needs to be said, and Marcus Walker, the Reverend Marcus Walker, made this point very well recently, where he pointed out that to date, the only minority faith group that has actually called for the disestablishment of the church is the Buddhist community. And I think there's actually a lot of support for the Church of England among a lot of people of minority faith. There's a very good point made by Professor Tariq Madud, who's a Muslim professor of sociology and politics at Bristol. And he said that the minimal nature of the Anglican establishment and its openness to other denominations actually makes it far less intimidating to minority faiths than what he calls a triumphal secularism. And I think you're suggesting a future of triumphal secularism.
Oh, well, I'm certainly not suggesting a future of triumphal secularism. And I just pulled you back a bit again. Well, it's certainly not talking about the disestablishment of the church.
Well, it's the first steps towards that, isn't it, Gavin? if you're going to get rid of the bishop.
It certainly isn't. I think you're sort of giving me a sort of a level of cunning that I do not deserve, and I'm certainly not advocating the disestablishment of a church. I think that the House of Lords still has the ability to represent people of many, many faiths. I mean, when I listen to debates in the House of Commons, so often you hear members of Parliament debating issues and topics guided by their faith and informed by their faith. And I have no doubt that the House of Lords would be continue to be as rich in terms of the quality and the breadth of debate and how faith would still always remain such an important anchor. And I may be more confident about the faith that parliamentarians carry, whether in the House of Lords or the House of Commons, and maybe you are, because I'm quite certain it will always be there at the centrepiece of national life and debate. So maybe I just have a greater faith than you do on this, Will. But
I think that may well be true.
Everything has to be enforced by laws and statute, whereas I just think the goodness and the faith will come out of people naturally.
Just finally, Gavin, we've been reading reports when it comes to your mission that you've been reaching across the House and perhaps looking to Jeremy Corbyn, amongst others, to support your campaign. Are you making friends in unlikely places?
Well, I think there's a broad range of support for this move, because most people feel that it's probably time to just make these small but important changes. So we had John MacDonald sign the amendment just the other day, and we've had Graham Stringer also indicate that he'll be signing the amendment. So you're reaching across, right across the political divide, because I think most people feel that it's time just to make this gentle but important change.
Parliament's new awkward squad?
Not at all. Parliament's group of people just wants to sort of battle away to make sure that our institutions feel relevant today.
I do appreciate, Gavin, that you say you don't want the disestablishment of the church. But all I would say is that I feel that if you get your way with your amendment, you know, teaming up with John MacDonald and Jeremy Corbyn, you may find it's a little bit like Michael Caine, only meant to blow the bloody doors off. And that's what I would worry about.
Well, can I assure you that I will be battling side by side with you to make sure we don't disestablish the church, if that's any consolation at all, because I don't believe it's going down that route. I actually think it will. I think if the Archbishop of Canterbury, if he was to reflect on this, he would sort of think maybe it's time that we recognise that change is needed. And I would also hope that the government, recognising this is a vote of conscience, will give its backbenchers a free vote on this, which seems to be usually the route that you would take on any issue of conscience.
And with that, thank you, Gavin. Thank you, Will. And thank you for listening to today's podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.